Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ryan, your host of Branding Brews. We're back for another episode. And this one, I'm pretty excited to be joined by Jessica Clare of Cleophis Quayle Brewing Company, based in the Bay Area. And you're in San Leandro, is that correct?
Yeah, San Leandro. We're right by the Oakland airport.
Awesome. Okay.
For everybody who flies in and out of Oakland.
Yeah, stop by. Right. Nice. Perfect. Okay. Well, just a quick little background. I guess I'll start off by saying that I work with Jessica. Cleophis is one of my clients, but we just wrapped up a really great project transitioning. They do 750 milliliter bottles, and they just transitioned from doing kind of more of like a wine style label where each label was the same, but they just changed the name. And you know, the specific details around each beer, which I think is a great way to go for certain instances. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is transitioning from, maybe just a, like that kind of like wine-like style label to, more custom labels for each release, and just how that came about and what the strategy was and what the perception was with their consumers, their customers, all that good stuff. Before we get into that, Jessica, why don't you kind of give us a little background about who you are, where you came from, and yeah, we'll start there.
Yeah, totally. Well, starting with me personally, I've been in beer for 6 years now. I started at Anchor, actually, just sort of on a whim. I had been working as a writer and doing a lot of freelance work before that, and I got really tired of freelancing. Anchor was hiring just for like an admin office position, and I was like, hey, I like beer. I'll go work at Anchor. No big deal. And it turns out I really like the beer industry. So I passed my certified Cicerone test while I was working at Anchor and just kept learning more. I had, you know, brew days at Anchor and days working in different positions outside of admin. And I just loved it and wanted to learn more. So I moved on from Anchor, and I actually spent a few months at Almanac, which was amazing. I learned so much from Damien, especially about the design process. And he had a design company before he started Almanac. So it was amazing to learn from him and just like, it's just wealth of knowledge.
yeah.
And then from there, I ended up, I had been helping out kind of part-time at Cleophis Quayle. I was technically their first employee. It was all friends and family before me.
Nice.
Yeah, so I started working there just, you know, they were only open on the weekends. So I was helping out part-time like 3 months after opening. So I just ended up spending more and more time there, and I loved the tiny operation. It was a totally different scale than I was used to. Liked being able to do a little bit of everything and be way more hands-on. So I ended up moving over to Cleophis Quayle full-time. And that was like 4 years ago. So, yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was it like? Yeah, kind of. I'm sure there's other folks in similar situations. I mean, I know folks that were at kind of larger, more regional breweries that had ended up going to smaller, like breweries that maybe have more recognition. I don't say more recognition, but I don't know. But yeah, go to a smaller brewery. Like, I'm curious, like how that went for you. Like, did you like the kind of more nimbleness you had, and just kind of that you could do a little bit of everything, wear multiple hats?
I loved that. Anchor was way more rigid. You know, a lot of bigger companies really usually are. Everybody has a little bit more defined roles and departments, and like, you do this because this is where, you know, your area is. And especially since I was still learning and trying to learn more, it was nice to shift to a smaller operation where it's like, okay, I could kind of do anything. It's like anywhere that I saw a need, I was free to jump in and start doing things. So that was actually really, it was a good challenge and kind of freeing. I didn't have to worry about stepping on anybody's toes. I could just do things, which was great. So,
yeah, it seems like you do a little bit of everything over there, kind of just running the shop.
Yeah, totally. So. I have a way more like concrete team now than I did a couple of years ago, which is amazing. Now we have a taproom manager, Lima, who's fantastic. We have a brewer, Ruben, who's just killing it. So it's nice to be able to kind of bring people in, and now we're kind of building a little bit of structure, like not a lot, we're still super tiny, but it's kind of nice to sort of like bring people into this like chaos and building and to have more people there and to grow the team. So that's been super fun too. New set of challenges now, like managing people and kind of like handing off and turning over things that I've just been doing for a long time, but it's satisfying to see.
That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
So that's actually good, I think a good segue into, well, yeah, just talking about how you kind of just run so much stuff over there. Got everyone's wearing multiple hats and stuff like that. But I've definitely noticed that you have a really kind of fun and creative approach to naming your beers, which I think lends well to the new style of design for each label. But and then also kind of a lot of unique ingredients and unique kind of beers and just that kind of approach. Can you maybe kind of go into that a little bit? I'd love to hear more about that. Like, who helps you guys just brainstorm for beer names and
Yeah, a
just,
lot of them come from Dan. Dan's pretty quick with the beer names. Ruben and I are not as fast. And a lot of times Dan will come up with a beer name and then we'll be like, oh no, we have to make that. That's too good. Like, I remember one of the first ones. For a long time, we actually didn't name our beers. It was all batch numbers.
Oh, okay.
So, for the first like year or two, it was like, batch 16, batch 27, and then the style name. But once you pass batch 100, that's a lot less interesting. So, then we've kind of started shifting to names. And one of the first beers that we named was the name came first for sure. It was I'ma Let You Finish. It was a Sati, Finish spelled Finnish. And it's one of those that came up like kind of as a joke. And it was like, oh no, wait, that name is too good. Now we have to make a Sati. So we did. So that was one of our early named beers. So we started kind of doing, I don't know, jokey, playful names out the gate when we did start transitioning to names. So yeah, a lot of those are from Dan. We also use Slack. We have a bad beer names channel in Slack too that
I
we
love
all
that.
dump like awful names into, or we'll be like, okay, we're naming this beer, guys. What do you got? So then we can kind of throw it out to the whole team and we can get a lot of terrible ideas, which is great.
Yeah, well, that's a great way to start spitballing out of those terrible names. It's probably going to evolve a great one, you
Oh
know. So that's
yeah.
kind of, and it's probably good just to like brain dump too, you know. Which so I think I like the idea of doing that, right? Just get out all these bad names first, just to like, just to get it out of your system and just to get those
Exactly.
creative
And
juices
then
flowing.
start moving into the good ones. Exactly. And it's nice too because, it's a channel that's around all the time. So it's not just like, oh, we're naming a beer. Like, we'll just drop names into there as we think of it. Or if we like see something that sparks inspiration. So, yeah, so that's been helpful too.
Absolutely. Well, so I guess it might kind of help to give a little the folks out there a little background about the style of beers and formats of the beers you release. Because I think that would also kind of help frame this conversation to anyone who's not familiar with Gliafis. Like,
Yeah,
could you
totally.
explain that?
Yeah, definitely. So we do a lot of barrel aging. We do a lot of barrel aged and fruited beers in particular. That's sort of our specialty that we've settled into. We don't only do that. We also do IPAs and lagers, but for the most part, barrel aged beers, fruited beers. We pull a lot of Belgian inspiration. Not necessarily adhering to strict Belgian styles, but that mindset of using what's available, what's seasonal, shifting, not being afraid of trying new things, that's very much our ethos. So, yeah, and since we're doing a lot of barrel aged and fruited beers, we do 750 milliliter format. Idea being that those are beers that sell are well. So, and we know that if it's going to be in a 750, people are going to save it. So we tend to do only beers that we know will hold up over time in our bottles. And the reason we've stuck with 750s is because A, it just kind of like cements and works well with that, with the barrel aged and fruited form, like beers. And B, logistically, we're really small. And even mobile canning has a pretty large batch size. So we've kind of held off on going the can route just because we don't want to can something and then sit on it for a long time. We're really, a little overly cautious about that maybe, but the 750s definitely highlight the beers that we're most proud of. So that's definitely something that we've been happy to stick with.
Yeah, I think it's a great format for that, and it makes a lot of sense just from what you explained. Absolutely. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how. I mean, obviously things are definitely evolving now with the cans and like people putting like really great, you know, barrel aged or just more premium beers into these canned formats or even just smaller formats. So,
Yeah, we've
but.
experimented with 500 milliliter bottles for a little bit, but we didn't see much traction in there with those, which we were really surprised by. So, 375s might be something to consider, but I think 500 was the wrong choice.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, Yeah, I just wonder if folks were just used to, you know, that are aware of your brand and or were just used to the 750s or, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. We were very surprised. We thought that the smaller format would be like an immediate hit. We just didn't see that. So, again, I think 500 milliliter, maybe not small enough to make a difference. Maybe, and we had 750s in the mix still as well. So maybe, yeah, given the choice between those two formats, people are just like, well, I might as well get the other, you know, the little bit bigger one. Yeah, I'm not super sure, but something to experiment more with in the future, I guess.
Yeah, there's always room to experiment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, cool. So, yeah, I mean, since we're going to be kind of talking a bit about the evolution or just kind of, yeah, I guess the evolution of some of the branding work there at Cleophis, can you maybe go into a bit about how the brand started or like what was the basis of the brand and maybe how you have over your time there built and kind of implemented the branding for Cleophis?
Yeah, so I guess a good place to start is with our name. Everything kind of comes from that, and it's not an intuitive name anyway. So the name actually is a merging of two family names from our founders, Dan and Peter. Dan had a great-great-great-grandfather named Cleophis, and Peter's mom's maiden name is Qualey. So they put together a first and a last name. The idea behind that kind of being Cleophis was a German immigrant, came over in the 1800s, and Qualey is an Irish last name. Peter has a lot of Irish family, so the idea was kind of coming over from Europe and bringing these brewing traditions and bringing these kind of like old school, old world inspirations. So that was very much the idea and the concept behind the name and the way it kind of affected the way that Dan and Peter brewed in the early days, and we continue to brew. So everything sort of stems from this like old world inspiration. And if anything, as I've done more with our branding, I've kind of leaned into that more and kind of push our beer program in that direction a little bit more as well. We used to be a little bit more like throw things at the wall, see what sticks as far as beer styles. And we've kind of stopped doing that so much and sort of refined what we're brewing. Definitely do more, yeah, fruited and barrel aged than we did out the gate, have more barrels than we did. So I try and keep the branding and the beer kind of close together. That's kind of been my big thing, is that I want the two to make sense together. So yeah, very much pulling that old European brewing inspiration, and pulling that same kind of vibe for our branding, especially as we transition to the new labels. I very much wanted to look at kind of like Victorian, like naturalist drawings and things like that for inspiration, and kind of pull from some of that same like old European exploration vibe. Yeah.
Hey there. I wanted to take a quick break to let you all know about some new stuff going on at Branding Brews. I've been gaining some momentum in publishing more articles and insights that I hope you'll find valuable. A couple of recent article topics include Stronger Brands Through Free Beer Merchandise, Marketing and Branding Through Creative Beer Events, and a series that I just started called Mistakes Breweries Are Making in Branding. Part 1 is A Logo Is Not a Brand. I'd love to have you join our subscription and get updates from me every week. A few perks you can expect would be insights from myself and other industry professionals on branding, marketing, and design advice. You can hit reply to any of my emails to ask me questions that you may have. And of course, notifications on new articles, podcasts, and other news. To join, head on over to brandingbrews.com and hit the subscribe tab on the top navigation. Lastly, I put out a new downloadable guide called Reduce Your Label Costs, 6 Ways to Save Money on Your Labels. Over the years, working with breweries and printers, I have collected tips and tricks to save money on the design and printing of bottle or can labels. To get that free download, again, visit brandingbrews.com. This time, look for the Resources tab. Thank you for your time. Let's get back to the interview. Let's maybe chat a little bit about your packaging, like label strategies that you had before,
mm-hmm.
And how that maybe then transitioned into where you're going now with the more custom labels for each release. How let's maybe say, like, how often did were you releasing bottles, and how did you decide upon the approach or the way of just coming up with the kind of like the wine style labels where you would just change the name and the details on each one?
Yeah, so a lot of that came from Dan in the early days, and I think that some of it was honestly just straight up practicality on his part. It was easy for him to make changes and to just kind of update the beer name. So our first labels Dan actually did in just in Illustrator. And he would just swap out. It was just super simple, you know, like beige wine stock with our logo on one side, name on the other. Yeah, it's just really straightforward, really simple. And it was nice, right? It's it had a good simple wine vibe, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, and they were a bit unique too, in that they were like pretty narrow. Like they didn't, you know, they weren't their typical size of like a wine label or like a 750 label.
No.
It has a little bit of uniqueness to it.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And just real simple, real straightforward. We had a second iteration that we used briefly that had like our logo as a watermark that one of our former employees made. But one of the things that we realized with those labels was that they were impossible to photograph. Yeah, with everything kind of spread out and wrapped around the bottle, it was really difficult to like display on a shelf, and then also to just take photos of and to have like the entire beer name in the photo. So that's one thing that sort of like that was a moment for us of realization. Like, oh wait, you can't actually see all the information at once. Right. So that's when we started talking to you and did the redesign that we did. Was that last year? A little longer ago.
It was a little while ago, I feel like now. But yeah.
So we shifted to everything kind of having that center panel format. Still very simple in that it was, you know, beige, mostly just logo in the middle with that die cut. Yeah, so it was still really simple and still had that sort of winery philosophy where it was pushing Cleophas Quayle first above the beer. But we started seeing that people didn't realize that we had more than one beer around. So that was another moment in the tasting room where people like would ask like, oh, well, what's that one? And it's like, well, there's actually four up there. And like, it just wouldn't click for people. Also, we've reached a point in our brewing and our beer program that we've really kind of, we're not making the same beers, but we've really kind of settled into like what we're bottling. We've hit a good rhythm. We have recipes that we're revisiting. So I want to start pushing the individual beers a little bit more, highlighting that we're using fruit, highlighting that we're using different ingredients. So that's where the wheels started turning in my head of like, well, we should actually start highlighting some of these beers that we're putting in bottles. We keep saying that what we're bottling are the beers that we're most proud of and that we're happy with and that best represent us. So let's start drawing a little bit of attention to those beers in particular.
Right. So, yeah, I guess. So how many releases were you doing previously in those 750 bottles that needed labels?
We were doing, when we first started, it was like one every couple months, and then we upped it to about one a month.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's a really good. Sorry, go ahead.
They're not huge batch sizes either. We do like 45 cases of most of them. So we do smaller batches. They're not, you know, sitting around for a long time. Yeah.
So that's a good point, right? There's obviously going to be downsides to doing that kind of wine style label where you just change the name. Looking back, all the names on the front of the label were all in the same color, same font. So from a distance, like you said, they probably like all looked like they were the same beer. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe a slight evolution of that could have been just maybe having some sort of color band or something you might have changed. So it still would have been easy enough for you to do, or possibly even I think you were having the printer change the name, if I'm not mistaken, or your owner, because he knows Illustrator or whatever.
Yeah, Dan was swapping out names, yeah.
Gotcha, right, mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I think, right, I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head there, like a slight evolution could have been just some element of color or something that changed would have been really easy to do in-house. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's benefits of being able to do some of these things in house. Obviously, because the evolution we're talking about here, you know, being a bit smaller and being able to just do these things, you know, where you're not ready to have somebody design custom labels for each release. So that would have been maybe a good way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So did, I guess just briefly, did your membership club have any kind of inspiration to you in regards to doing some more custom labels for each release, or did that have any kind of influence?
It did, actually. One of the things that we've talked about wanting to do, and that actually was part of our first round of labels that you designed, was a bottle exclusive for the Menagerie of Distinguished Drinkers, our membership club. And we wanted to be able to throw more more like secret releases their way, and secret bottle releases in particular. So thinking about ways to make that more interesting and draw a little bit more attention to them, to those bottle releases for our members, also kind of made me think, well, maybe we should just do that across the board. I didn't think that would hurt any of our bottles to do custom labels, and not just for our members. So, so part of the thought process started with, making custom labels for the Menagerie, for Menagerie releases, and then kind of expanding that to the entire bottle line.
Great. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'd love to kind of dig into, I try not to say the word unpack, because I feel like every podcast is like, let's unpack this. So I'm really trying to avoid that use of that word. So let's dig into the idea. the idea of, well, like what kind of decisions, I know you touched on one or two, but decisions that maybe led into the idea of going with creating custom labels for each release, was there, and what made you feel like this was a time to approach that? Like, and I guess maybe throwing out a quick idea is, like, was it like, well, you mentioned that the people weren't necessarily recognizing the difference between each label, but and also wanting to do something special for your membership club. Mm-hmm. But was there a time that your brewery was like, okay, I feel like we've maybe reached this certain size. Maybe we're releasing so many, you know, beers that, like, was there, what kind of points were like kind of light bulb moments for you guys to be recognizing or maybe wanting to approach the idea of custom labels for each release?
So another moment was actually the first beer that, that you designed the new label for, Fermento Mora. I remember when, this is the second year that we've done it, last year when we released Fermento Mora, I remember talking to Dan, and we sort of toyed with the idea of, like, it'd be cool to get like a blackberry and a skull on there and kind of really play into the name, but it's not something we really had the like time or energy or skill to do. So as we were talking about releasing Fermento Mora again, that was still kind of in the back of my mind of like, we had talked about drawing a lot of attention to this beer in particular, and really highlighting this beer in particular. So this seems like a good place to start. This is a beer that people get super excited about in our tasting room. This is a beer that we get super excited about, and that we had like a clear idea of like, this is what we would want on the label. So that was another moment where it seemed like this is a good time to do this. Like, we're talking about this beer again. We missed an opportunity last year. Let's hit it this time. And then in thinking about Fermento Mora and continuing that thought process again, like with the member bottle, it was sort of like, but what if we did this for all of our beers? What if we kept that going? So we've also been talking a lot about our bottles in particular in the tasting room and working with our team and our staff about like really emphasizing and educating customers that all of our beers are bottle conditioned. And that's a very different thing. It's not like, you know, picking up a six pack from the grocery store. Unless it's Sierra Nevada, but that's a different story.
Right.
It's a very different beer. It's going to evolve over time. So, you know, you have your collectors and your people who sell their beers, but a lot of people don't know that. So we really wanted to start pushing a little bit of like an educational program around our bottles. We're actually doing another training on that tonight with the team to talk through, like, we got lambic baskets so we can pour from baskets in the tasting room. We're going to talk about sour beer and wine comparisons a lot and really start elevating the bottles and kind of highlighting that our bottles are different from our draft. Like, there's a huge difference between these two beers. Fermento Mora in bottles, Fermento Mora on draft, totally different, will only become more different over time. So it's also that idea of really emphasizing how special our bottles are was another point where I started thinking about drawing more attention to the beer in them as well.
I love that. Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a couple of things that come to mind that are an advantage of doing these unique labels for each one is, man, it's just like the Instagrammability.
Oh yeah.
of beers, right? Or just even the marketing opportunities. Because before, you know, you could photograph a bottle that has a new name on it, like a label. But if it's just the name that changed, and it's people are like, oh, like I've seen that, or right?
Yeah, people now scroll past it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that might be right. I'm sure that's going to be a huge tool for you running marketing and branding to be able to do these custom. Like, I've already seen a few they've been posting these mm-hmm. few bottle shots that have these like great angles, and like you've got these nice fancy kind of labels on them.
We've taken so many photos already; it is insane.
Oh, that's awesome!
It's fantastic. Yeah. I've also been thinking about merch tie-ins for a lot of these too. I want to do glassware and things like that. In particular for Abbey Pale, I want to get glasses that have the poppies on them. We've gotten a lot of feedback in particular about that label from people and really liking just the floral pops of color.
Yeah. And even a possible tattoo, right?
Yep. We've got a few people that are like, I want to get that tattooed on me. So if they do it, I'm going to take so many photos.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, but I think those are great points in recognizing opportunities, or I guess maybe even like benefits of investing that extra money into going with more custom labels for each release.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, because now you've got these opportunities that are to build your brand awareness, and like people just like seeing these, you can create a bunch of new photos, these different like bottle shots, and then you can expand take the branding elements for each beer and then put those onto like glasses or shirts or whatever, like you're saying, or tattoos.
Yeah, totally. I definitely have been looking at temporary tattoos too. I might order some, but
oh yeah, that's
I think
perfect.
It would be really fun. Another point, one of our members actually made too is she like specifically said like, oh, like all of these labels are totally different. Like they're going to look really good together. Like I'm going to collect all of them. So they all look differently. Like they all look different. So like to hear somebody flat out say that they want to buy more bottles because of the labels is also a powerful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess maybe, obviously this is an audio format, but I'll try to explain the label format a bit, because I think that might help people understand too just what we're talking about. But so the Cleophis logo is kind of this, is it a octagon kind of,
yeah,
itch.
Yeah.
So generally it's that kind of shape, but very old world style, like you had mentioned, the kind of roots of like Germany and like Irish, but so very textured, very old world looking. And so what we had done before with these kind of more wine style labels is we had the logo on the top with a custom die cut around the top. So you get that very unique branding look on the shelf right away. It was a bit more subtle in that it was on the top of the label, because we obviously wanted to leave room at the bottom to change the name and the style. And it was kind of a cream kind of off-white color. So very, very kind of plain front, made to kind of look, you know, high-end, classy, kind of made to look like that wine label style. So what we ended up doing to evolve that was we looked at a few different iterations of ideas, but the one we thought worked the best was taking that logo shape and making it much larger and making that almost the entire front of the bottle, where it was the shape. And then what we did was inside of that shape, around the logo shape was we created like this metallic copper that was also unique in that the way it caught the light, and it really framed that custom logo die cut shape for the label, which made it really stand out on the shelf as well. But then inside of that logo shape, we then created kind of a sort of a window that we were able to create these scenes within. So each label is different, has different artwork, kind of a little bit of a different style. But then inside of that, there's an anchor at the bottom that is the Cleophis Quailey, Wordmark logo. So each label is very consistent because you have this really custom die cut shape that's a very unique shape. That's this, you know, obviously bringing a lot of brand visual brand awareness when as soon as you see it on the shelf. And then it has these panels that come off the sides that wrap around and obviously have the legal statements and descriptions. So I just kind of wanted to frame that a little bit so maybe you can get the idea. The fact that like you can look at these bottles with this very custom cut shape, very unique, very branded to Cleophas, yet has this kind of window and these custom artwork elements that are totally unique on each one. So just kind of wanted to frame that a bit. But that's super cool. So, I mean, I love the idea that like in that style, because I think like if you, depending on how you do them, if you do custom artwork for each release, if there's not some sort of consistency there, like we were, like I was just mentioning with the die cut and all these consistency things, then people just may be like, oh, that's a cool one-off release, but it's not going to be collect them all. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So
you don't get the Pokemon effect. well, and it was also important to me that there was consistency and continuity there, because so many times you walk into a bottle shop and you can't even tell what brewery made the beer, right? I feel like in particular on cans, like you'll have this beautiful artwork, but I don't know what it is or where it came from. You have to really hunt out the name of the brewery. And I didn't want that. I wanted it to very clearly be our beer. So I think we hit that middle mark of having identity for the beers, but then keeping our Cleophas identity throughout.
Yeah, exactly. I think that worked out really, really great. And yeah, and we did approach it. I mean, the canvas was open, but I felt like we did kind of end up approaching it a bit as like a refresh on the label, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
So I think it's important to keep in mind if you have some successful elements from previous labels or brand elements that you can take those and just kind of evolve them. Cause do you feel that they're still like, I mean, I think they do, but still have that like Cleophas label look to them, but just new.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, between the die cut shape, which is, like you said, just a larger version of the die cut that we had on our old design, and keeping the same background color. Yeah, between those two elements in particular, it very much still matches. I mean, we have the new labels lined up with our old labels right now in the tasting room, and they all look like they belong together. It still fits.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So let's dig into the idea. So you released these to public on Saturday, which at the recording of this was just 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear how the release party went, the reception that you know you got from these, and I guess maybe also too, like you had mentioned before, like you have a pretty kind of diehard set of customers, of fans of the brand.
We have the Menagerie of Distinguished Drinkers, which is our member club. So we gave them all like advance notice that we were going to be releasing these and gave them like a sneak peek of the labels. So they were all excited and ready for this. They came out, throughout the weekend, picked up bottles. We'll still see more of them coming in over the next couple of weeks too, grabbing bottles. We've heard a lot from a lot of them that they're super excited and can't wait. So we have that like core of people who are like ready for these. And then for the general public, we released these on Saturdays and then, you know, have hit our Instagram and social media talking about them and playing up the release. So we had a bunch of people come out. We had people ordering bottles to drink in the tasting room too, which is something we don't get super often, but is always amazing. And then just a lot of conversation about liking it. And we saw people pick up multiple brands. So instead of just buying, you know, one that they liked, they bought, you know, both. This is also the first time that we've released more than one beer on the same day. And that was super effective as well. And just giving people, for the general public, 2 options, for our members, 3 options, they could get all at once and kind of that collector effect. So,
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like the idea too, just the opportunity to build buzz around a release as mm-hmm. you know, like we talked about the, obviously Instagram's huge, but if you could do like sneak peeks of new beer releases by showing glimpses of the new artwork or, those kind of things. So definitely, Yeah, you can start building a buzz around an individual release. So that's great. Mm-hmm. But then also, like you just mentioned, and we talked before, we just got back from the Summit Conference in California. But we were kind of chatting a little bit about the idea of being able to release multiple beers at one time, and that idea of building more buzz, because it's not just a single beer release. It's like you could even create multiples where people feel more encouraged to buy more than one bottle, because, you know, and even if you can tie them together a little bit. But mm-hmm. I love that idea as well.
Yeah, and so far it's worked for us. So this may be our new strategy going forward with bottles, is just to always plan to release a few at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe we can kind of wrap up here a little bit. Do you have kind of any ideas where, you know, where you might like to take this a bit down the road? Or, I mean, as far as evolving the brand, like, where do you guys hope to go? Are you hoping just to kind of be able to grow your sales and through these new labels and through these bottle releases, and just kind of be able to grow with where you're at now? Or do you guys have plans to evolve and grow in different ways in the future?
Mostly we want to, our goal is always sustainability. We want to be able to take care of our employees. We want to be able to pay our bills. So we just want to be able to sell enough to be able to do that. We just added health insurance for everybody. So we're looking at new ways to pay for that.
right.
Yeah. So that's kind of the root of any of our sales strategies or anything like that, is just looking at, like, okay, like, where do we move into next? Like, where's a gap that we could do better that will help keep the entire business healthy? So bottles were definitely one that we talked about. It's like, okay, our bottle sales could be better. We're making really interesting beers and bottles. How do we push them more? And kind of looking at bottles in particular. And the goal there is to sell more in our tasting room, to have more available to our members, and then also to sell more out in the world wholesale. Bottle sales are some of our most, we don't do a lot of outside sales. Like, most of our sales are directly through our tasting room, but some of our longest running, best, most loyal accounts are bottle shops. So kind of helping them out a little bit and keeping things interesting for them. And then adding to that lineup, the bottle shops have been fantastic. We have a lot of really good bottle shops out here in the Bay Area, and we want to be in more of them. So the idea being that this will help with that too.
Yeah. Got to keep pushing out that new.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But that makes sense, right? It's just kind of, I think everybody says it, or like, I think, you know, we're not everybody, but that they, you know, grow smarter, right? Or, you know,
exactly.
Take it one step at a time. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I worked at Anchor. Like, I've seen what it looks like to not really think about healthy growth. And so many breweries overextended and expanded more than they should have. So we've always been really cautious about that, and not wanting to, you know, add a bunch of new equipment and a bunch of capacity without knowing that we can actually, like, meet that and pay for that. So, so that's us. Cautious growth, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, especially now, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it doesn't sound as sexy as smart growth, right? But it's true, right? Cautious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making sure we can take care of ourselves first. Yeah.
Yeah. That's I think probably important thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Right on. Well, this was a great conversation. I think, like, you know, when we did this and finished it up, I think it was really, it's a great topic, because, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of breweries that are smaller breweries out there that, you know, are maybe growing and evolving a bit. And, I definitely see the advantage of doing the kind of wine style labels where you just change the name for each release. And obviously that worked for you for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm sure there's a lot of other breweries in similar situations. Like, I do see the advantage of both sides. And I just thought it would be a really great conversation to have, to discuss how you came to this point, you know, how other breweries might come to this point and see the advantage of doing custom, you know, labels for each release. I am a big fan of keeping some sort of brand system in place for labels, even if there are one-off releases, because I feel like you'd need to really build a brand around your brewery and not just crazy one-off releases that are going to be done and forgotten with, you know, like, and like you had said, stacking these up on the shelf, you're starting to get this consistent branding that people are like, oh, I want to collect all of these. So that's, I think, really important. So yeah, I think this was a really great conversation. Appreciate you taking the time, Jessica. And if people wanted to find you online personally, if you want to push that out, or if you, you know, or just where can they find Cleophas Quayle online?
So they can find us, our website, Instagram and Twitter, Cleophas Quayle, for both, Instagram and Twitter. And myself, I'm on Twitter. What is my Twitter name? What is my handle?
Yeah, I know, right? Like, what is that?
Oh, it's Jessica James. Yep, that's great. That's real grown up.
Yeah,
But I'm on there, and I do rant about beer things from time to time. So,
yeah. You do. Right on.
But mostly, I put way more energy into Cleophas's social media than my own, so that's a better place.
Yeah. So if you're looking for some interesting tidbits of info and kind of some of Jessica's brain, you should follow Cleophas for that.
Haikus about beer on Twitter all the time. Yeah.
Yes. Lots of haikus, which is fun. Absolutely. Right on. Well, yeah, again, I think I appreciate you coming on. I think this is kind of a valuable kind of look at this approach to labels. And yeah, thank you so much for your time, Jessica. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for checking out Branding Brews. My name is Ryan, your host, and also the owner of Craft Brew Creative. With over 15 years of experience in branding and design, I am able to bring my knowledge not only to this show, but to great clients that make great beer. From the essentials like websites, labels, tap handles, and sales sheets, to merchandise and vehicle wraps, Craft Brew Creative would love to help develop a cohesive and strong brand for your brewery. Craft Brew Creative thrives on delivering value through a collaborative, fun, and interactive design process. Whether you're an existing brewery or a brewery in planning, Craft Brew Creative will be a valuable partner to your team. If you are in need of any design or marketing services, I would love to get in touch. Head on over to craftbrewcreative.com for more information, or just feel free to email me, Ryan@craftbrewcreative.com.